Hi, my name is Bobby Kamari and I want to thank you for joining me for the Living in Light podcast, where we explore the beautiful ways that God shows up with his love, light and liberty in and through everyday people like you and me. The theme for season 3 is the preparation and maturity of the bride, where we cultivate a deeper hunger and devotion for our bridegroom as we prepare for his return, as we go against the grain of culture, as we rise up in being salt and light, bold in truth and radical in love, and doing all of this from a place of deep intimacy with the Lord. This is part one of my conversation with the beautiful Elizabeth Klanger. You are gonna love this. It's a super powerful conversation. Please do make sure that you will tune in for part two. Hello everyone, welcome to season 3 of the Living in Light podcast. It is such a joy to have you all join us, and I am super, super excited to have Elizabeth Klanger with me today, who I met about a year ago. And Elizabeth shared some of her testimony and it was so powerful. And so I'm so glad that you guys are actually going to get to hear it. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Elizabeth before you hear from her. So let me let you guys know that she actually is a former practitioner of witchcraft. So she was in the occult for several years, but then she experienced a transformative salvation in lockdown in March 2020. And now she's a dedicated evangelist for the Lord. She passionately shares her powerful testimony of Jesus' amazing grace in her life, and her heart is to guide people away from the kingdom of darkness and towards salvation. She's passionate about spiritual warfare, and as someone who is a speaker, she is committed to bringing the lost through her words, through her testimony, through her example, to the embrace of Jesus's love, and sharing about her inspirational journey in the Lord. And before we hear from Elizabeth, I just want to read a scripture that I just think is so apt for your story. And it's Colossians 1:13 that says, "The Father has delivered and drawn us to himself out of the control and the dominion of darkness and transferred us into the kingdom of the Son of his love." And I just think that is so, you know, conducive to your story, Elizabeth. So welcome to Living in Light podcast.
Thank you, Bobby. Such an honor to be able to share my testimony here with you in the glory of his name.
Yeah. It's exciting because you're going to share your testimony, but then you're also going to, you know, be able to help the listeners understand the ways of the occult, but actually how we can shine our light brighter still, because, you know, that's what we're called to do. We're called to be salt and light in a place, in a world that is so, so dark. So why don't you kick off by sharing a little bit about your childhood, like what kind of upbringing you had? Did you have any faith when you were growing up?
So I was brought up in a Greek Orthodox household. Growing up, I think, were some of the hardest years of my life, because from what I remember, Mum was always very ill. My mum suffered from depression and bipolar, which as a young child living with two older sisters and my dad, there was never really an understanding of that mental illness and how to really help my mum through it. So a lot of my memories as a child growing up were mum's ill, you know, mum's drinking alcohol, mum's not really in a state where she can be a mum to me. And, you know, so dad was always trying to be very strong for us. We didn't particularly have any strong faith at the time. So my mum and dad would sometimes just go to church at Christmas and Easter, but they had no real relationship with the Lord.
So when all this is like going on. There's so much brokenness in the home. Like, although you guys are going to church, it's more like a religious practice as opposed to Jesus being able to show up in the midst of this depression, in the midst of this family and this brokenness.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And did you guys, even though you were going to church, like from a ritualistic place, did you guys have any awareness of the occult as the family, or for you personally, was any of that stuff normal in your house, or did anyone ever experience anything spiritual while you were growing up?
So as a child, I was always able to see the spiritual realm. I was very sensitive, and I would just, you know, see things in the house. I would see lights. I would see sort of things in the spiritual realm that I knew others couldn't see. And I would cry a lot because I was very sensitive growing up. But I felt isolated in that sense because no one else could really see what I was seeing. And, you know, and I think in some ways I was just really trying to reach out to something greater, to for help, you know, because we were really desperate. We were desperately trying to help my mum.
And so when would you say like the occult started kind of, I guess, you know, becoming real to you, or like how did that door open for you?
So growing up, I really put my emphasis on being an artist and being creative and creating a lot of my artwork. So that was a way of kind of escaping, you know, what was the struggle that we had at home, and just the joy that it brought me, that it brought my family as well, seeing these kind of, you know, creations, whether they were drawings or paintings. And then I moved on as a young adult to do a fine arts degree, and so I started in 2003. And then I would say the door really opened to the occult when two things happened. So one of them was that we opened as a family the door to a witch, and she came to the house with my dad's sister. And so we didn't know that she was a witch at the time, but I know that now. And, you know, as a Greek hospitable family, we invited her in and we served Greek coffee. So as we sat around the table now with our coffee cups, and my dad's sister said, "Oh, Tamsin can read your fortune. She can, you know, she can tell you about your future in the cup." And so we agreed, my dad agreed. And, you know, I just remember my dad just smiling like a Cheshire cat, really, because, you know, he was quite excited. And so she started off with him. And then she read my sister's and predicted that she was going to get married. And then she turned to me and her eyes really fixed on me. And she started to tell me about my fine arts degree and how I would get a very good grade, which I did. And she told me I was doing a lot of thinking, which I was. But really, when she left, everything she spoke into my life created so much fear and anxiety that 3 months down the line, I had a nervous breakdown. And that then led me to the occult.
What was the fear and the anxiety that was being created? Because I imagine, like, when she's actually there and she's like reading your, you know, fortune, I can imagine, like you said, like your dad, there must have been a buzz, and she's saying these things that are like connecting to the supernatural in you.
Yeah.
And she's saying these things about, you know, about your future. So why did it bring a sense of fear for you?
I think that the fear was that, what if it doesn't happen, you know, what if it doesn't happen, or what is that I felt out of control, because you know, our words have powers. I mean, our words have power. The Bible says that life and death is in the power of the tongue. And she spoke death over me in that moment, even though she was telling me, okay, I'm going to get a good grade. But she really left me with fear of the future.
Wow.
Because she took that power from me. And then I became powerless, which then led to a nervous breakdown.
It's like she literally ransomed your life to, you know, like these things happening. And if they didn't happen, it was like your innocence and that organic way of you just living your life and letting whatever is going to happen, happen. It's like it completely got stolen from you and you came in bondage of her words. And it's like your life now is being driven by her words. So you have this breakdown. And was there anything that before you had these, like this coffee reading, were you someone that was like prone to be depressed or prone to have a breakdown? Or do you feel like literally that thing opened the door and that is what led to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I was always very sensitive and emotional, but that was, I'd never suffered an emotional breakdown like that before.
And then how did that then evolve into like the occult actually becoming part of what you intentionally were pursuing?
So during that time of going through, you know, depression and anxiety, I would, you know, just go for walks to try to sort of, because everything had to stop. I couldn't get a job. I couldn't work. I just couldn't function. And I remember that I was walking in the road one day just to get some fresh air. And I bumped into my mum's sister. And she says, oh, you know, Lizzie, you don't look yourself. Are you okay? And I said to her, no, I'm going through, you know, a really bad depression. And the next day she came round and she said, I've been through depression myself. She said, that's my mum's sister. And so it also runs, you know, in the family. And I've got this book for you. And this book was a book of angels with positive affirmations. So each day was a positive affirmation. And I started to read this book and, you know, it was very beautiful. It had beautiful illustrations. And part of me started to feel better. And so she then says to me, you know, I know a lady who can tell you who your angel is. So I became very sort of fascinated by these angels and, you know, the fact that I was starting to feel better. I then was interested. So I made an appointment to see this woman who could tell me who my angel was.
You know what that makes me think of? Something that actually we heard, because myself and Elizabeth, we go to the same church, and we heard our pastor just share something on Sunday where he was just speaking about certain spirits can actually make it seem as if they're healing you because they can, they've oppressed you, then they can lift off their oppression so that you get better. And so that then, you know, seems like they have been healed. And it reminds me of like what happened there, because the same spirits that were oppressing you now, like lifting their pressure on you. So it makes it seem like, oh my gosh, this thing is actually, you know, doing me good.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the demonic setup, if you like. Because what it did is it led me now to the witch.
Right.
And I arrived, I made an appointment to see this woman who was a witch, who I didn't know she was a witch. And, you know, let's just call her Maria. So when I arrived just at her door even, I remember hearing her gravelly voice. And it was a really kind of run-down place. And I was I just scurried there, and I even remember picking up an icon I had of Jesus, a Greek Orthodox icon, and just shoving it in my bag, thinking, oh yeah, that will protect me. And then hurrying along to see this woman. And at the door, I never forget that I actually, in that moment, thought, oh, she sounds really evil because of her gravelly voice, you know, ironically, not knowing that she was a witch. And when she opened the door, I noticed that her house was full of angels and candles, and she had an image of Jesus on this white table, and she had laid out a spread of tarot cards.
Wow. And did you, so at this point, you know, you said you didn't know she was a witch. So who did you think you were going to see? Were you going to see like a spiritualist, or who did you think you were actually going to see?
So at the time, I had really no understanding of spiritualism or occultism. I really just thought that I was going to see this woman that could tell me who my angel was. And that was what my mind was really fixed on, was to be healed, to find peace, because I had no peace and I was very vulnerable.
So then you've got the tarot card. So then did she do a reading of you? And so talk me through what happened there and how that kind of led then to you being in the occult.
Yeah. So as we sat at the table, she asked me to shuffle the deck. So I didn't know that it was going to be a tarot reading, because I'd never seen them before. So I've now got the tarot cards in my hands, and she's asked me to shuffle them. And she then proceeds to tell me my past, present, and future. And so as the cards are laid out before me, I am now seeing certain things that are coming out that are telling me, okay, you know, yes, I've gone through this breakdown, and a little bit about certain things of my personal life, my worry even for my mum. And I remember she was looking just above my head. And so she's now looking into the spiritual realm. And she was telling me dates of when certain things were going to happen. And really, Bobby, that was the moment of temptation presented to me, where I made a decision to want that power, because I had no power. I felt powerless. I was broken. I couldn't help my mom. I couldn't help myself. I didn't know how I was going to live my life. I was completely and utterly lost and broken. And so when I met Maria, there was a power there that I wanted, because I felt powerless.
Wow. That is, yeah. And I think that is like a definitely an allure and an attraction for people when it does come to the occult, because it does seem powerful. It does seem, and I personally, because, you know, like we have eternity on the inside of us, you know, and God is, you know, we're supernatural beings having like a natural experience here on earth. And I think that the occult has a way of like connecting to the supernatural within us and eternity within us, but it's the counterfeit way to tap into eternity, because the scriptures tell us that eternity is knowing Jesus. You know? And so when we don't know Jesus, we try and know eternity through other means, and it does seem powerful and it seems attractive and it seems sexy. And like, you know, like you've spoken about the brokenness of your childhood and then just feeling so powerless, if someone then offers you power and it makes you feel that you could have things that you've never been able to possess before, then of course it's going to be attractive, and it's such a ploy of the enemy to woo people.
Yes.
That. And so did you, you know, when you're saying that you made the temptation was there, and I guess that was the moment that you resolved that what she is walking in, I want. So was that like quite a conscious thing? And did you then after that, were you full whack in, or was that still something that you needed to process and you slowly kind of made the journey?
Yeah, I mean, in that moment, it really was a decision, you know, of my will, which is the most dangerous decision you can make, because I then sat with her for 15 years and she became my spiritual mum, you know, because unlike my mum, who was very weak, she was strong in my eyes. She was strong. She could guide me. She could somehow save me. And so in that moment, I dedicated my life to being in the occult and wanting to see everything that she saw, wanting to have every power that she had at that very high level. And the next invitation I had from her was to join her circle group, which met which was with a group of other witches and warlocks, and we met every Monday night at 8 o'clock, and you know, we were never allowed to be late because she always told us that the spirit waits for no one. So there was always this underlying kind of fear, well, I can't be late and I have to be utterly committed to this, that I would never ever miss a single session. And so we would sit in a circle and we always had to sit on the same chair, and then we would invite the spirit, who were the deceased loved ones, who, you know, we know to be familiar spirits, and receive messages from them for each other. And everyone that sat around that circle was, you know, also very broken. And, you know, I started to get really good at what I was doing. In fact, I excelled far beyond them. And the one evening they took out what is a Ouija board. And Maria said to me, oh, have you done one before? And I said, no, I haven't.
Did you
and
have
so
awareness of what a Ouija board was by this stage?
I mean, I had heard of Ouija boards, and you know, I remember seeing it in films. I knew it was a way of connecting to the spiritual realm, so I was actually, again, quite excited by the thought of seeing that manifestation, you know, where you see something moving, because it was, for me, it was evidence that what I was doing was real. It was then now becoming tangible, and so really the entrapment of the devil took hold, an even stronger hold at that moment, because where he entrapped me was to connect me with who I thought was my godbrother, who passed away when I was 3 years old, and his name was Christopher. And so as we all placed our hands on the planchette, it began to move, and Maria said, who do you want to speak to? And it wrote out my name. Because, you know, the devil sort of wants to make you feel, you know, that's the hook, that's the snare. And then we asked, well, who are you? And the planchette then moved to spell out the name Christopher. And at that point, I was completely sold out, because I had never told anyone about my godbrother. And I knew as a child that he really loved me. In fact, I felt like he was the only one who really loved me. So that completely kind of sold me out into the occult. And I thought, wow, you know, oh my God, if only his mum could know this, that he's still alive, that he, you know, he's not dead. And, you know, this is just amazing. And then he spelled out, I love you and you're great. Because the devil comes as an angel of light.
Totally. Like, I just want to jump in there for a minute. Like, I was watching a testimony recently, and it was a gentleman that had come out of the occult and out of like hardcore witchcraft. And he was just sharing that the enemy, you know, he literally has like the dark realm has like books on us as believers. And these books are just, you know, the things that are going to wound us, the things that we're that are going to make us stumble, you know, our weaknesses, all of that stuff. And so the enemy, you know, was at work there because he knew that Christopher was the only one who had an intimate connection with. And so the enemy used those familiar spirits to actually draw us in. Like, I'd love you to just speak into that a bit more, like that tactic of the enemy to use things that we are broken by or that are going to most actually bring us into darkness.
I mean, it brings to my mind the scripture that says no weapon formed against us will prosper, because the devil forms a weapon that is very personal to us. He forms it, and that's how it has impact. Because if it was general, then it wouldn't affect you. But when it's personal, and you know, the enemy does that because he assigns demons to your life. If you are in that environment of the occult, because we were summoning demons, you know, without realizing, these familiar spirits that were claiming to be our loved ones were demons. And those and the deeper and deeper and deeper I found myself just falling into the occult and getting entangled in his web.
What was so what was life like? You said like for 15 years, you know, like you were in that, you were being mentored by this spiritual mum. So what was life like in the occult? You're obviously calling these spirits, you're doing Ouija boards, you're doing you know, rituals. Like, how did the occult affect relationships, friendships, what you work as, you know, your sexuality, like all of those things? Like, talk me through what life in the occult actually was like for you and the impact that it had just in the thought and the way that you did your life.
Yeah, I mean, it was I think for the early stages of it, I would now you know, every year the devil would give me a new power, so I would have ability to what you call astral project, and I would start to use these powers to gain jobs, to advance myself, and be, for what the most of it was, a successful, you know, well-being kind of a guru, which I ended up doing. And so the devil found a way to use me now as his accomplice to recruit people into the occult, which for most people, and for me at the time, I actually thought I was serving God, because I thought, I'm now healing people. I'm, you know, using these healing powers, which I thought I had, to heal people and tell them, well, don't worry, your mum's actually there. I can see her. She's got, you know, she's got white hair, and she's telling me that, you know, you're the watch that she gave you for Christmas is broken. So, you know, these were sort of very detailed evidence now that I was giving these people to hook them in unknowingly into the occult. So I started to run.
Can I just ask you, Elizabeth? So, like, say you're giving this encouragement to someone about, you know, you might have grey hair, and so are you seeing in the spirit? Are you seeing that familiar spirit in the spirit and able to feed back, or are you you know, saying things that are not true, or are you actually sharing what you can see in the realm of the spirit?
Yeah, absolutely. I could see everything in the spirit. And so what I was giving, I thought was going to help them. I thought, well, you don't have to be so downcast because your mum's there, you know. And that led me then to open up my own, you know, business actually in well-being. So I would have like meditation circles that grew in numbers. You know, I would have hundreds of people come for these meditations, and what they didn't know, that the devil was opening portals and gateways in their mind. Because on this guided journey that I would take them on, it was opening up the realm of the spirit and opening up, you know, even greater things that they never knew about. And I never knew at that time. Just how demonic what I was doing was.
And did you have, like, whilst all this is going on, did you have a sense of peace? Like, was it counterfeit peace, or did you still have a fear in you? You know, like, what was your actual mind like at that time? And and was this life satisfying you?
I mean, that life was no longer my own, because the devil's an identity thief. You know, he stole my identity in that moment when I dedicated my life to the occult. So the demons that actually possessed me took over. I was no longer Elizabeth. I was now whatever spirit that I had let in. And I also went on to, you know, to practice that further with mediumship and channeling, where you actually invite those spirits to take over. So I, you know, I would transform into things. And as you know, I felt extremely, as a person, I felt extremely alone. I didn't really want to be, you know, because the spiritual realm for me was so exciting. I didn't want to be part of this earth. I just wanted to be spirit. And so I was moving so close to the edge of death. I had no idea. It was only because of God's amazing grace that he really kept me alive all of those years. You know, when I look back now, I mean, it's incredible, because I was so possessed that it was no longer me. I had no human emotion. I would not cry. I would not get sick for years. I separated myself from family, from friends. I would, you know, I ended up sitting in a room for 12 hours a day with a red light on, because all I wanted to do was be in the spirit.
And how... like, two things. Firstly, when you said about you used to transform into things, that reminds me of a testimony that I read years and years and years ago. I'm probably going to get the lady's name wrong, but I think her name was Mary Baxter. And the Lord took her to hell on several occasions. And he had her, I believe, in hell for 40 days. And she's written, you know, a book about it. I think it's called 40 Days in Hell or something about around that. But she shares in this book that in hell, she saw that it is shaped like a person, and that she speaks about, like, one part of hell, for example, like the arm. She said that whole area was purely those that had practiced the occult. And she spoke about this one particular woman. And that she was sharing how what would happen, she watched this in the spirit realm, that this one particular woman, every like 20 seconds, her skin, like her outer shell, would like be stripped off of her, and it was excruciating pain, like it was torturous every single time that particular identity came off of her. And then she'd transform into something, and then she'd transform into something else, and then she'd transform into something else. And every single time she'd transform into something, so she would turn into a really stunning, beautiful, gorgeous woman. And then 20 seconds later, she would transform into an old woman. And then 20 seconds later, she would transform into a cat. And she was just the woman who was in hell watching all of this, shared that every single persona that she had transformed into when she was practicing witchcraft on earth is the same persona that they would torturously turn into every 20 seconds in hell. And I never, I wonder, how does that work? Like, how do people transform into these different forms? But you're saying that you actually were doing that.
I mean, and in fact, I had seen that. I've actually witnessed that in seances where the spirit would manifest, and I would turn into a cat from the Egyptian cat called Bastet, who is very much alive today. And it took utter commitment and dedication. I had to change my diet. I couldn't eat meat. I couldn't wear metal. I had to sit in what's called a red lit cabinet, because red light is the lowest denominator of light you can have for the demons to manifest, because they could not expose themselves to the light because they would get burnt.
Wow.
In real light. And I would turn into, I was now working, so we got guided actually to, the spirits guided us to a place in central London, in Euston, in a basement, where I now joined physical mediums. So they were mediums that would transform, as you say, into these spiritual beings that you could then see. And, and I would pay for this, because nothing's free. You know, it's amazing that salvation is free, and yet occultism cost me thousands of pounds to find what I thought I was chasing, which, was this a sense of counterfeit peace, of counterfeit healing, of counterfeit power. Because, the devil has power, but he has no authority. He has no authority. And the thing is, the more he gives you, the more he wants.
That's the end of part one of my conversation with Elizabeth Klanger. I pray that you've been mega blessed by listening. And please do join us for part two. That will be coming your way next week. And before you head off, guys, I just want to tell you about Sex Pose. 3-day conference happening from the 4th to the 6th of April in Clapham Junction, London. It's groundbreaking. Last year was phenomenal. The amount of testimonies, I mean, we could feel God showing up in such a mighty way at the conference. And the testimonies that have been coming through have just been so humbling and awe-inspiring. And I want to invite you to this year's event. It is going to be 3 days of incredible worship, phenomenal teachings that will equip you in the most powerful way to not only get whole yourself and set free, but to really rise up as salt and light with deep conviction and courage in these crazy times that we are living in. People that are going to be ministering include myself and Dom and Thea Muir. We've got Steve Tebb and Dwayne Morgan leading worship. We've got Dave Gill. We've got Sarah Sedgwick, Ruth Rawlings ministering. We've got such a beautiful worship band. We're going to have breakout sessions, Q&A panels. We've got Gen Z Night. There are dedicated sessions about biblical sexuality for children and teenagers. I mean, it is a family affair. It doesn't matter what age you are. it doesn't matter if you're married, if you're a young person, if you're dating, if you're not dating, whatever your family situation might be, this conference is for you. Whether you're a church leader, whether you're a youth leader, teacher, whether you're a leader in any capacity in the kingdom, I mean, whoever you are, this conference is for you, because for far too long, the church has been silent when it comes to sexuality. And that's why we've got so much dysfunction. And it really is time for the church to get equipped to claim back sexuality for the kingdom of God. God is the one who designed sexuality. He is the author of intimacy, of pleasure. And far too long, we have just let Satan hijack sexuality, and it's time to take sexuality back, saints. So come and get equipped, come and get whole, come and get mobilized. I mean, this is a conference that everyone needs to be at. All the details can be found at www.livinginlight.co.uk/sexpose. The link will be in the descriptions. You can get tickets there, more info there. You can get tickets from Eventbrite if you want to pay the fee, completely up to you. But just get tickets. If you need information that's not on the website, then please reach out to me. You can just email me at bobby@livinginlight.co.uk. Honestly, cannot appeal to you enough to be there. So tell everyone. I really hope to see you there, guys. Bless you. Thank you so much for listening. And I can't wait to be with you again next week.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's show. All related social media handles and links can be found in the notes section. If you did enjoy today's episode, then please do feel free to share it, and do subscribe to the podcast if you want to know when a new episode is heading your way. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do that via Instagram or Facebook, or you can head over to livinginlight.co.uk. I cannot wait to be with you guys again, and thank you so much for listening to the Living in Light podcast. See to the fearful.